In this episode of Startups of the Rest of Us, Mike and I discuss breaking through SaaS plateaus with special guest Ruben Gomez. This is Startups of the Rest of Us, episode 231. Welcome to Startups to the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So where this week, Mike?
Well, we got an email from Trevor Smithlin, and he wrote in to let us know about a product he has called EnhanceCast. And essentially, it's a podcast listening app that allows you to instantly access the content that is coming out of the podcast. So essentially, they do some transcriptions and they basically bookmark a bunch of different things. And if you're busy doing something, it essentially allows you to bookmark the content to be able to come back to it later. And they do some fancy parsing to make sure that that content is kind of marked up with meta tags. But I looked at it. It was pretty cool. It was almost like a visual representation of the podcast. And you can find that at enhancecast.com.
Very nice. Let's dive into the interview today. This week, we have a special guest on the show. It's Ruben Gomez with BidSketch. Thanks a lot for coming on the show, Ruben.
Thanks for inviting me.
So my guess is most people listening to this podcast already know who you are. Ruben's founder of BidSketch, which is proposal software. It's a SaaS app and started off being focused on designers, but now really BidSketch is more of a horizontal app and has a pretty big market. And Ruben, when did you launch BidSketch?
Launched BidSketch about 5.5 years ago.
Yeah. In terms of SaaS timelines, you've been around quite a long time.
Yeah, been doing this for a while. In the interviews that I had, I used to say that I was in software. I guess I have to change that up a little bit.
Yeah, because it changes over time. And now you can say SaaS, and a lot of people know what that means.
Right.
Whereas 5 years ago, yeah, we used to say web-based software. Right? That's still how I kind of talk about my stuff at cocktail parties. And I typically get the, what does that mean? Yeah. So the reason we wanted to have you on the show today, Ruben, is you and I talk quite a bit. And we're in touch about things. We're actually in a mastermind group as well. And one thing I've noticed about how you operate is that you are really good at breaking through plateaus. There are inevitable plateaus when you're running a business. And specifically with SaaS, I'm starting to see this pattern of folks hitting a plateau right after launch. So typically when revenue is in, we'll say maybe $1,000, $2,000, a low four-figure amount, and people launch, and then that launch dies down, and they don't know what to do next. And so there's kind of a plateau as they figure that out. And then the next plateau, depending on pricing and churn and all that stuff, seems to hit around, let's say, $10,000-$12,000 a month. And it often requires an adjustment. Unless you got everything just right from the start and you knew your market and your pricing's on, you're probably going to hit a slowdown around there. And then there tends to be this next one, let's say it's in the maybe $25,000, $30,000 range that we see folks hitting. And there are different causes for each of these, but you've powered through these plateaus, and I've seen you do it using a series of tactics. You have a good mindset about it, and frankly, you seem to have a high-level process. I know you haven't blogged about it, and I haven't heard you talk about it on a podcast, so I kind of wanted to dive into that today and figure out how it is you think so that others can learn from you.
Sure. One thing I'd like to mention is that what I've noticed from certain apps is that that first plateau is a lot higher if the price point is higher for the app or product, which is interesting.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I saw it myself with Hittail, which was a $10, $20 product on the low end, versus Drip, which was a $49.99 product on the low end. And although they were slightly different in that I had a launch list for Drip, so I could get out to several thousand people quickly, that first plateau, instead of being a $1,000 or $2,000, was actually at about $7,000. So, which was a much better place to be in, right? And if you're going to try to quit your job, you're almost there if you're already at seven. But I agree. People who are going after $10 price points, even getting to $1,000 a month is quite a bit of work.
Right.
So I guess to start, when your opinion or from what you've seen, because you also talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, founders are asking you for advice and that kind of stuff. Why do you think there is that maybe $1,000 to $2,000 plateau right after launch?
Sometimes I'll talk to people that have hit that plateau or say they've hit a plateau, but actually haven't hit a plateau. It's more about they haven't gotten enough product market fit to get any growth initially. So that there's a difference between hitting a plateau and just getting started, right?
Yeah, go into that further. What do you mean by that, the difference?
So if you just launched and you have maybe no customers, or you have 5 customers or 6 customers, because I've talked to a group of people that fit this profile. They either have no customers or they have 10 or fewer customers. Generally, that means they never had growth for them to get to a plateau, right? So they haven't plateaued. I don't consider that a plateau. They're just getting started.
Yeah.
They need to get enough product market fit to actually get some interest and get people paying for the product. At that point, it's very questionable whether there's anybody that really values the solution to the problem enough to want to pay for that product.
So the question is still, have they built something that anyone wants to use?
Right.
They haven't even answered that yet.
Right. So at that point, that's a very different place than you do have 1,000 in recurring revenue or 2,000 in recurring revenue. So there is some interest there, mm-hmm. right? And obviously, getting to product market fit is really hard. It mm-hmm. takes a lot of work, and there's a lot you can do to get there. For the people that are in that $1,000 to $2,000 and they start to hit a plateau, generally, I see a couple reasons why they're hitting that. One of the more common reasons is that they just don't have enough volume. They don't have enough trials. They don't have enough qualified traffic to be able to get to where they want to get, right? They're trying to, let's say, get to 6,000 or 10,000. 10,000 is pretty common for a lot of people. But they're working on optimizing their conversions because they think that they need more customers. Well, I'm not getting enough of these trials to convert to customers, or I'm having too many people cancel. But in reality, they just don't have enough trials to focus on that just yet. It's really important to not ignore that, but if you're just getting 1,000 visitors a month or 2,000 visitors a month, your price point isn't extremely high, and you're converting a handful of those customers into trials and some of those into customers, then you're not going to optimize your way into a $10,000 a month business.
Well, that's more of a balancing act, isn't it? I mean, because you're balancing between getting traffic versus making sure that you're not leaking everybody out the bottom of your funnel. So how do you go about making sure that you're balancing that correctly?
Well, this is why I mentioned that there's a difference between the businesses that just have something like 10 customers and the ones that have enough to be in the thousands in recurring revenue, because they do have some interest. So one of the problems that I see often is that people don't know where their conversion rates should be or their retention should be. Now, every business is different, but there are ranges, right? And there are rules of thumb. So I'll see somebody working on trying to improve their retention. And let's say that their churn is somewhere around 5% or 8% or something like that. But they're working with such low numbers that you can't really count on those numbers too much. Now, I'd look at retention and say, wow, you really need to work on retention, even in low numbers. If a quarter of your customers aren't sticking around, then that's definitely a red flag for me. But really, when it's just you, you kind of need to switch and focus more on one thing than the other, right? Especially if you're doing it part-time. So once you learn what the ranges are, and you see there aren't any obvious red flags to where just nobody's converting into a paying customer and almost everybody leaves after a couple of months, then really the next thing is to get enough volume to sort of take you to the next level. But then you also want to go back if your retention is a little high and focus on that and make that better.
Yeah, I view it as a pendulum. And I always swing to one side, and then I'll notice that you kind of optimize something to the point of these numbers are starting to look good. Churn has gone down, and now it's time to insert more traffic into that funnel. And I've even seen a pendulum swing over, let's say maybe 4 years ago. I remember Mike and I talking on the podcast about how everyone was focusing on traffic and people weren't optimizing enough and they weren't split testing enough and they weren't doing that stuff. I see it the other way now. I think too many people are trying to optimize too early. I mean, that's basically what you're saying here, is that right, you can't optimize your way into a $10,000 a month business. You need to drive 5,000, 10,000 uniques a month in order to get to that point, probably, right? And it depends on price point and all this other stuff, but 1,000 or 2,000 uniques a month isn't going to do it.
Right, exactly. That's one of the more common things. Another one is pricing, right? So you're probably not going to get pricing right when you launch. You're probably not going to have pricing right a year or two after you have your product art out. And people don't spend enough time testing and adjusting their pricing early on. in the early days, in the first few weeks and months, that's when you need to test your pricing the most. It can be a little bit harder if you're working with very small numbers, but we're talking about businesses that do have some customers and have had a little bit of growth. So you should be testing pricing and just improving that.
Yep, that makes sense. I've done the same. I changed Hittail's pricing twice after I acquired it. And with Drip, I changed the entire pricing model. It was based on one thing when we launched, and then it's now based on number of subscribers. That's a more standard marketing automation approach. Then I think I've actually changed not the price points themselves, but the volume that you can do for each price point. I think I've changed it at least twice, maybe three times. And all that's based on user feedback and looking at reports and that kind of stuff. I won't say it's right or wrong, but I know it can be better optimized, but it's something I don't have time to invest in too much right now.
Right. And it's better than it was when you first started.
It is. I've moved in the right direction. I think when you first start too, it's hard because let's say you want a $99 a month app. You really need a lot of functionality for someone to pay $99 in any type of volume. And so you either have to spend a lot more time building that app, or you have to have some type of brand name, because over time, the more customers you get and the more people are talking about it, you do become that brand and people will say, oh, well, everybody recommended this to me, so I am willing to pay $99. But when no one's heard about you, it is hard to ask for as much as your app might be worth upfront.
That's true. In the early days, I modeled my pricing after FreshBooks pricing because a lot of people just look at either competitors or alternatives that may be similar and basically copy them on pricing. And that's pretty much what I did. FreshBooks wasn't a competitor, but they were the most similar of the apps that were out there because after somebody creates a proposal, once they get a deal, then they create an invoice. And I went with that pricing model, but it was wrong for my business. I didn't learn that later till I started testing pricing and started to learn what worked for my business and started talking to people. And once I did, that really ignited some good growth for it.
I kind of mentioned at the start that we had three plateaus we were going to talk about. There's that first one that's post-launch. And sounds like the pattern you're seeing is most people try to optimize their way up from there, but really they should be going after more traffic in general. This second plateau, if I recall when you hit it, that was when you adjusted your pricing. Is that right?
Right.
Talk to us a little bit about that process. Like you hit this plateau, let's say between 10 and 15 grand a month, and you're wondering why it's not going up. How did you figure out what the cause was? Did you have to run a lot of different tests and try things, or was it pretty obvious? And then how did you go about fixing that?
Yeah, I mean, I launched with that same pricing. So I'd gone a long time without testing pricing at all, right? So I had this feeling in the back of my mind that I should make a pricing change, that I should do something there. Also, I'd added a lot of features since then. So it was a very different product from when I launched. The other thing is I wasn't charging very much for a B2B app. So if you have a B2B app and you're charging $10 a month or $20 a month for your low-end plan, that isn't necessarily wrong, but you can very likely charge a lot more for your lower tier plan, right? So there were all these things sort of coming together. And there was some feedback that I was listening to. Feedback is tough with pricing because a lot of the feedback that you get with pricing is that it's too expensive, which isn't right. You have to learn to mostly ignore that unless almost everybody tells you that. You're going to get a certain amount of people just telling you that every month. So one of the things that I did was add a cancellation comments, a freeform text field. When somebody went to go canceled, it was required. They had to fill out and add their comment in there. And every once in a while, I'd see people complaining about the price. So I think my lower end tier plan was $9 a month. And people would say, this is too expensive, et cetera, right? Always. And I kind of wondered about that. Maybe I should charge a little bit less. I never did it. I think I ever charged $5 a month. But one of the interesting things, as I've moved up my pricing and just run all different types of tests, is that every time I change pricing, let's say right now my lower tier is $29 a month, I always get the same number of people saying that it's too expensive. But if I reduced it by $5 or $10, they pay for it. That never really happens because my product was $10 cheaper. It was $20 cheaper, right? So I always find that really interesting.
But I think that it's difficult for somebody who's starting out to make those mental leaps because you're looking at this, looking back in retrospect and saying, right, well, I was there and you didn't buy it then and now it's more expensive and you're complaining that $5 or $10 would have made a difference. But for the person who's stuck at this plateau, they don't have that history. They're not that much further in the future and trying to look backwards.
Right. I think the important thing for them is to know that it's normal to get people saying that it's too expensive to expect that. If they're not getting that, then they're definitely undercharging. I think the time to wonder whether it is overpriced might be if just a lot of people are saying that. That's one of the top reasons why people are canceling.
Yep. I would agree with that based on experience as well. So that was in the back of your mind, and that's why you attacked it early on. How did you go about figuring out what your pricing tier should be? And did you actually restructure your pricing, or did you just kind of increase the tiers themselves, just increase the dollar amounts per tier?
There had been one or two tests that I ran in the past early on when I first launched with pricing. And basically, I just increased the pricing on the tiers that I had. And I got to a point of where I just wasn't making as much money, right? So then I lowered the pricing back to where I was making the most money. Later on, when I revisited pricing and I wanted to run these new tests, I changed my approach. I didn't just increase the pricing on the tiers. So that was okay enough to get me up to a point. But the big results came from just completely restructuring my pricing. Started off by doing a lot of customer interviews and looking at my usage data, right? So it was a combination of qualitative and quantitative data that I used to figure out what were the key features that people were using, right? And what types of customers were signing up. Right. So I changed my pricing from two plans to three, and those three plans directly reflect the types of customers that I get in. So one of them is a freelancer plan, the other one's a studio plan, and the last one's an agency plan. All of those changes helped me earn more per customer per month.
And after you made that pricing adjustment, you keep saying you tested it. Now, did you like run a split test where you had half the people seeing the old pricing, half the people seeing the new? And then did you just follow it through trial sign up, or did you kind of follow it all the way through to see how many converted with each price point?
Yes. So I actually had multiple tests with pricing. So I tested pricing over maybe 4 or 5 months, something like that. And I started off with some of the simpler tests. I wanted to isolate, for example, plan names from pricing increases, right? I wanted to know that going with three plans was actually making a difference. I wanted to know that renaming the plans from these generic plan names, basic, premium, and whatever I was using, to something to where a customer could look at and say, this is the plan for me. I wanted to know that that made a difference. I also did that with plan features. And then once I actually got to the revenue number, you know, I let those run a little bit longer. In each case, I didn't just look at whether or not more people were clicking on the sign up button. I also looked at, do more people sign up? And then, okay, now I have a trial. Then I continue to look at, do those trials convert, right? Mm-hmm. So that at the end, do I end up with more money, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with retention. It takes a lot longer to look at retention mm-hmm. because customers sometimes will be around for a year or two. You can't always follow through on retention until it's just been several months. I actually had to roll back a pricing change that had been in place for 3 months because I looked at retention and it wasn't better. Everything else looked good. It looked like I was making more money. But about 3 months later, when I looked at retention for those cohorts, I saw that this is actually worse than what I had before.
It's crazy. So you really have to look at your data and not just look at how many people clicked that initial sign up button, right? It can change all the way down the line.
Right. Once I decided, okay, this is working better, I switched it over. So I did split test that and I switched it over. But when I rolled back my pricing, I wasn't still split testing that,
right?
Everyone was going through the new pricing. The important thing about that, I think, is that you just have to continue watching it and sort of comparing it to what it was before your price increase.
Right. And are you using Kissmetrics to kind of track that all the way through? Is that longitudinal data?
Yeah, I use Kissmetrics and then I just look directly in my database. Yep. So I use both.
It sounds to me like one of the interesting points that you kind of, I won't say completely glossed over, but you at least mentioned it, was that testing these pricing points, I mean, it sounds like they're early on when you hit that post-launch plateau, pricing is one of those issues that you really need to look at to make sure that you're charging the appropriate amounts. And then at the next plateau you hit, by changing your pricing, you were able to essentially accelerate the growth of the product. But in each of those cases, it takes a while to get through those pricing tests. I think you had mentioned 3 or 4 months of testing in order to just test the price. And then in addition to that, you said that in order to test retention and basically make sure that you're not losing people faster, that takes even longer.
Right. But you can capitalize on these pricing changes sooner, right? So some of these pricing changes are, if they're working early on, meaning if you're getting more trials out of it, there's a pretty good chance that those trials will convert at a similar rate, right? So what I've seen with price testing is that that's what happens. Most of the time, they will convert at the same rate. The churn will be about the same. There might be some differences, but it's not major. So you can actually switch things over. But if you do that, then you do want to watch that to make sure that you're right about the trial to paid conversion rate, that you're right about the churn rate as well.
So you kind of make a quick decision and then you back check that. And 90 days later, you can truly verify that everything turned out the way you thought it would based on your math.
Right.
Expected yep. math, yeah. So it's interesting, you know, we're talking about these plateaus, and I imagine there might be someone in the audience who doesn't know what that looks like. So I was thinking as you were talking that you might have a SaaS app where you're doing $4,000 a month, and the next month you're doing $5,500, and that feels fantastic. And the next month you're doing $6,000, and then $7,500, and you're just going up $10,000, $11,000, $12,000, and then all of a sudden it's $12,200, and the month after it's $12,400, and $12,400, and $12,500, and literally your revenue curve just stalls out, right? I mean, that's what
right.
I've been through it. You've been through it. Like, we've seen this, and it can kind of rattle you because A, it's unexpected, right? It's like, well, everything was going so good and all of a sudden it's not working, right?
Right.
And it can also discourage you. So we'll touch on the mindset stuff in a second because I think that's important. But when you've seen these plateaus coming, the first time it kind of shocks you. The second time you kind of figure it out. And the third time it's like, almost expected, right? You're almost anticipating it. How long have most of these plateaus? Do you think there's a range? Like, how long has it taken you to break through each of them in months?
In months?
Yeah.
Generally, 4 to 6 months. It depends.
Right. Depends on how deep it is and how much stuff you have to test and all that.
I think the sooner you can break out of it, the better.
Yeah.
I mean, the best thing is to avoid them altogether, right?
To see them coming and be constantly. Right. See, that's something you've done really well recently is you run a lot of split tests now. You're at the point, obviously, where your traffic, tens of thousands of uniques a month, and you can run split tests and optimize your way to an increase in retention or whatever.
Right. But even in the early days, when you have a lot less volume, you can forecast when you're going to plateau. I think Barometrics came out with some forecast tool that for free recently that helps you do that. But it's a really simple calculation. You can just do it in a spreadsheet or open up a calculator and look at the percentage of customers that are canceling. At what point am I basically going to plateau? And is the number of trials and customers not going to be enough to offset that?
Yep. And then you can look and you can say, is churn too high? And if so, I need to start working on that now, 6 months in advance of that plateau. Or is it that my number of trials is still at 150 every month? But if my churn is low, but I only have 150 trials, how do I get to 300 trials in the next 6 months, right? 300 sustainable. Or is it a price point thing? If the average revenue per customer is only $15 a month, $20 a month, how do I double that in the next 6 months, right? Is that's the kind of process you'd go through?
Exactly. So one of the more interesting things was even in the earlier days, like I said, a lot of times it's just volumes. Sometimes it is retention, right? Well, it's always retention. Retention is always part of it. But sometimes it's churn that they need to focus on. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I was thinking about was at what point in the early days, let's say somebody has $1,000 a month in recurring revenue or so, $2,000, at what point is their churn too high to actually say, okay, this is the thing that I need to focus on.
Yeah, earlier you said if it's 20, you know, a quarter,
well,
right? 25%.
Yeah, even lower than that. Like, so if I was starting over again and I had a product and my churn rate, even in the early days, and even though I know that numbers aren't all that great when you don't have that many customers, you don't have that many trials coming in, there is a difference between having a 15% churn rate, right? And 5%. I have had 5% churn in those early days. Mm-hmm. And if I had a product that had 10% or 15%, I'd probably pay attention to that.
Ooh, so I think my number would be anything over 15% aggregate churn. Yeah, it would be. I think 20 is too high. I think 15. The problem with this is we're talking about an average.
Right.
And typically your first 60-day churn is going to be a lot higher than everything else. And when you average it in, it gets kind of muddy.
The other thing that makes that difficult is that it could be a function of like what your product is. So for example, when Rob and I were testing things with the Bikepreneur Academy, we noticed that there was a distinct drop off at the fourth month. And by that time, somebody's paid a couple hundred $1,000, they have to really think about it. It's like, am I going to continue on this path, or is this just something I was kind of interested in, but not really, and I'm not going to follow through with it? And people were making the decision around the fourth month to basically just kind of drop out. So sometimes it's time dependent as well.
I agree. It very much depends on the type of product. With some products, it might be kind of natural, kind of like you mentioned with membership sites and stuff, to where you see a big drop off after a certain point in time. And for that industry or for that type of product, yeah, churn rates might be higher. So that's a good point. I mean, I think Jason Cohen mentioned somewhere that he was worried about their churn at 2% for WP Engine. And then he found out that, hey, that's actually pretty good.
Oh,
that's,
my gosh.
That's the normal for hosting, right?
That's crazy low. Most SaaS operators would kill for that. Yeah, so that's the thing. I mean, I think to talk about an aggregate number is not totally accurate. It'd be so much better to have that cohort, that churn grid, and be able to look at it. But with Drip, I didn't have the churn grid until maybe 4 or 5 months ago because the data just wasn't there in order to give us aggregate numbers. So when I was looking at it when we first launched, it was 23% a month or something. Right. It's because I had a ton of new trials in the funnel. And then as those moved on and my trial volume kind of dropped off after the launch, that dropped way down, dropped into the, I think it was at 12 or 13% for a while. And then I'd get a bunch of new trials and it would kind of bounce back up because those first 60 days were so rough on churn.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing I like is Drip is a really good example because you can't solely rely on just your analytics and numbers like this. You have to look at qualitative data. Watching you work on Drip and growing that and getting to product market fit. So a lot of people just say, well, getting to product market fit is binary, but it's not, right?
Yep.
It's a gradient. So you can have a lot of product market fit or just enough to get up to a point. What I found interesting watching you work on Drip was that early on, you didn't have really good numbers because of the amount of customers that you had, but you relied a lot on customer conversations and gut, kind of, right? You knew what you were building and what you wanted to see. And because you did have all that experience from other products and apps, it's sort of a little bit easier to go with gut sometimes.
That's right. That's right. And I think if you don't have that, then the customer conversations are huge. And then I think finding someone, either in a mastermind or a mentor or an advisor, someone who does have that gut feeling and who has the experience to lend to it.
Exactly.
Cool. So we kind of covered the first two plateaus, that $1,000 to $2,000 range, the $10,000 to $15,000. And then there's this $25,000 to $30,000 plateau. Lend your thoughts. I mean, how did you push past it? Do you have thoughts on general cause of that you see in other apps? Or do you think it varies widely?
So there are obviously a lot more people that get to $1,000 or $2,000 a month or $10,000, right, than get to $20,000 or $30,000 or even $40,000. So I've known fewer people that have gotten up to that point and then only some of them plateau there. And it seems to kind of be different from the ones that I know. So I can't really say that I've noticed real specific patterns, but it's usually the retention, right, losing way too many customers still, or it's back to volume. You need to get just a lot more customers to get to the next stage. For me, it was more about setting up, I wouldn't say automating my marketing because it's a combination of some manual processes and automation, but setting up systems and processes to scale up marketing, right?
Yep, kind of moving it up to the next step or the next level.
Right, right. It's more about doubling down on what's working.
And so you've seen a lot of plateaus, you've gotten through a lot of them. When you see that you're going to be plateauing in however many months it is, in the next few months, what's your process at that point? Like, how do you start thinking about it mentally in order to either preempt it or when you get there to start systematically knocking out the things that are keeping you at that plateau?
Generally, it's if you look at it at the highest level, what I do is try to identify, okay, where is my problem, right? Either I'm not getting enough customers or I'm losing too many customers. It's always a combination of both, but one of them is going to be a bigger problem than the other. But that's too broad. It's too hard to tackle, right? So even if I say, okay, well, I'm just not getting enough customers, then what? Like, there's so many things that you can do with that. So what I do is I break it down into smallest possible things that I can, right? So I'm not getting enough customers. So, okay, why not? Am I not getting enough traffic? Am I not getting enough qualified traffic? Am I not getting enough trials? Are those trials not converting to customers at the right rate? What is it that's going wrong, right? So as part of this process is setting a goal that I want to reach, right? I typically start with this. I'll pick my number. I want to get to, it's usually revenue-based, to this much in recurring revenue. What do I need to get to that number, right? So then I start to break down how many trials do I need at this price point to get there? What does my churn need to be? Maybe start playing around with some numbers. What if I get more trials or increase my average revenue per customer or move down my churn? And typically, once I'm looking at from that perspective, and then I take a look at my problem areas, I just start by picking off the lowest hanging fruit, right? So there are going to be some things that are just a lot easier to do than others. So maybe yes, maybe increasing my traffic will get me more customers, but so will dramatically reducing my churn. But maybe my churn is at a low enough place to where it's just going to be way too hard and way too much work to do that. So the easier thing is really getting more traffic.
Got it. And getting those rules of thumb, kind of the ranges, what should my churn be? What should my trial to paid be? What should my visitor to trial be? That's part of the kind of the method that you're using to analyze this. And the way that we have come across those values is A, by personal experience of the apps that you run, right? It's your experience. It's also by talking to other founders, whether it's in a mastermind or talking to people, doing Skype calls, talking to people at a conference, maybe MicroConf. I think folks in Founder Cafe or Micropreneur Academy could easily, if they brought their numbers, like I would happily analyze someone's numbers on the forums. And right. I think any of those, there are probably some blog posts somewhere that kind of talk about it, but I think there's so much more value in being able to talk one-on-one or one to a group with other founders, because the specifics of the situation always dictate where your number should be, right?
Right.
Any range you and I could throw out here, still going to be a wide range because it depends on your pricing and your market and your this and your that.
I think knowing the ranges is the bare minimum that you need to know, right? And there are too many people that don't know that. Mm-hmm. So if I didn't know that, it would be almost impossible for me to break out of one of these plateaus, right? It would be a guessing game, and it would have to be luck, complete luck.
I'm going to throw out some ranges, and I want to see if you agree with them. Kind of a small B2B SaaS app, let's say between BidSketch, which starts at about $29, and on up to something that maybe starts at $99 a month. That's lower end range that we'd be dealing in with bootstrappers. I would say that from visitor to trial, when asking for credit card up front, you should be between about 0.8% and 2%.
Yep.
All right, maybe 0.75. I mean, one would be great, but I think if you're charging $99 a month, I think getting 1% is ambitious. I think you're doing really well. So that's why I had that low thing. Not asking for credit card. What's the range there? Is it 5 to 15? Is that too broad?
I'm trying to think of, because I went almost a year without asking for a credit card up front. So I would say that 5 is too low, but you know, I guess it depends on how much traffic you're getting and all that stuff. I would go with that. Like if you're getting less than 5%, just know that 5 is
low. Right. So you better have like a $99 product if you're doing 5, right? If you have a $10 product and you're a 5, you're in real trouble. You should be closer to 15. Okay. And then trial to paid, if you're asking for credit card up front, I want to be between 40 and 60% conversion trial to paid.
Yep.
I know that some people go higher than that, but...
Right, and some go a little lower. But if you're in the 30s, it's...
Yeah, there's room for improvement.
Yeah.
And then if you're not asking for credit card, I've never had an app that I've done that with, but the range is what, about, is it 10 to 20? 5 to 15? That's the one I forget.
Yeah, so I'd say 5 is too low. Maybe on the low end, 8 to 20.
Okay.
I've talked to several people that have done this. I've done this myself. And it's interesting. I've actually moved up that number from like 8 to 16, 17% and not had a significant or meaningful increase in paid customers simply because of how aggressive or passive I am in converting those visitors into trials.
That's right. Because if you're overly aggressive, then they churn out really quick. Is that right?
Well, less of them convert into paying customers, right? Because I'm being super aggressive about getting them into a trial.
Got it. Okay. And then churn rates. Oh, this will be a tough one. Typically, I see the first 60 days combined somewhere between, let's say if you're at 20%, I think you're doing pretty well. And I've seen churn rates up around 40 in the first 60 days.
Right.
To me, that's the danger zone if you're above 39.
Yeah. It's crazy. Look at a business like Moz, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like 40% in their first 90 days mm-hmm. or something like that. They have a really nice business.
Yeah.
They have a pretty big business.
Yeah. Still. I think that's price point, right? Because they start at 99 right. and a lot of traffic and stuff. But yeah, I think 40 is at the top end yeah. of where I'd want to be though.
Yeah. If I had 45, 50%, I'd...
Yeah, really be looking at that. Yeah. And then lastly, post 60-day churn or post 90-day churn. I mean, this one really depends. Like you said, Jason Cohen with hosting WP Engine, 2%. That's 2% per month after the first 60. That's phenomenal. I think most SaaS businesses would kill for that. The ranges that I see, I feel like 5 to 8% is where I see most bootstrapped businesses in our price range landing. Like if you're at 9 or 10%, I'm starting to feel less comfortable with that. That means after your first initial 60-day of churn, you're now losing one in every 10 customers if you're at 10%. Like, that's a lot. It's tough to replace that.
Yeah, there's a problem. Typically, at most any scale, if you're losing that many customers, then you want to take care of that, I think.
Yep.
So going back to the discussion about plateaus a little bit, once your business kind of comes to this screeching halt, how do you go about making sure that your mindset is in the right place? Because I think it could probably be incredibly demoralizing to hit one of these plateaus and your entire business basically grinds to a halt for months at a time and you're not able to kind of push through and figure out really what's going wrong. Because your business, it may not be getting worse, but it's certainly not getting better. And you're always looking to make sure that things are going up and to the right. So how do you make sure that your mind is in the right place and that you're thinking about the right things to help push through that plateau?
I think it helps to know that it's normal. Most businesses, unless they have zero churn, right, or negative, they're going to plateau at some point. Expect it if you have a SaaS product. Try to predict it too. It's pretty easy to do. So those things help. They help, but it still sucks. When you hit it, they're not going to make it so that you feel like, okay, this is okay. I can do this and you'll move forward without being phased at all. For me, it's frustrating. I think one of the more common things that I've felt in the past, frustrated with progress. And especially if you try a lot of things, or in my earlier days when I had less experience, I had less confidence that I could break through, right? So the questions would come up, and still to this day, they come up. Can I go past this? Can I actually, right? These are the negative talk that comes up every once in a while. And I think one of the things that's been super helpful for me is just being able to talk honestly about it. First, it's just being honest with myself about it. And then having a mastermind group and having friends that I can talk to about it. It's really easy for people to just ask, hey, how's it going with the product? How's everything? And for the automatic response to be, yeah, it's going great. And then just talk about the things that are going well, right? It's a lot harder to be honest and just say that you've hit a plateau and that you're struggling with trials or churn or something like that. But I think it's important to do. It's helpful. It's really tough to just not talk about it and sort of try to just deal with it entirely yourself in your head.
Awesome. Well, Ruben, thanks so much for coming on the show. You've dropped a lot of knowledge here today. If folks want to keep in touch with you online, keep tabs on what you're up to, what's the best way to do that?
Twitter, probably. So Earthling works on Twitter.
Very good. And thanks again. Hope to have you on the show again soon.
Thanks for inviting me.
If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690. Or you can email it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.